Thank you very much for this introduction and for the advertisement of my book. So let me, this is supposed to be a series of four lectures leading to hopefully the full proof of the Demijohn-Kettler formula. So that's at least my aim age, to start from very beginning and lead you gently to the proof of Demijohn-Kettler formula. And I do hope that I will be able to at least give you a full overview of the proof. Some details I may have to omit, but I would try to rope in as many details as possible. So today, this talk will be devoted more to the introduction to the Lie algebra, the Kac-Moody Lie algebra. So my apologies to those of many of the experts in the audience on Kac-Moody algebra and also groups, but today I'm going to concentrate largely on Kac-Moody Lie algebra. So those of you who are familiar, you can take a short nap after a good lunch. So we start with a GCM, so a generalized Cartan matrix. So this is generalized Cartan matrix. H, by definition, a matrix, let's say A equals A I J, where I and J run between 1 and L, L being the rank of the system, such that some properties need to be satisfied. One, A I J are in integers. Aii is 2, Aij is non-positive integer for I different from j, and 2, Aij equals 0 if and only if Aji equals 0. So the zeros occur symmetrically about the diagonal. So such a matrix of integers is called a GCM. Now, to any such GCM, one associates a Lie algebra. So, so before I do that, so by a realization, of A, we mean a vector space. Which is supposed to be German H, and my inadequacy in writing the German symbols, I would just underline H together with a certain subset alpha 1 through alpha L and a certain subset alpha 1 through alpha L check, where, so this is a triple, so a realization is a triple where I take a vector space H together with these elements alpha 1, alpha L and alpha 1 check, alpha L check, where, so let me explain, so where 1, H is a complex vector space of dimension exactly equal to L plus co-rank of A. What is co-rank? So co-rank of A by definition is L minus rank of A. So that's the definition of co-rank. 2, alpha 1, alpha L is a certain subset of the dual of H. And dual of a vector space, I will just denote it by H star. And 3, alpha 1 check, alpha L check, is a subset of H itself. And finally, so far this matrix Aij has not appeared in this, so so far I just took a vector space of a certain dimension. So, well, A appeared in a rather weak way here, just L minus Courant, L plus Courant, and a certain subset of elements in H star and H, but it appears in a more precise manner, this matrix, by demanding that alpha I, alpha j check should be a j I, and this should be true for all I and j. So such a triple is called a realization of this GCM A. Now such a realization exists and is unique. So this is a simple linear algebra lemma. So lemma, such a realization exists and is unique, of course, up to an isomorphism. Okay, so once we take such a realization, then I can define now definition. So let G equals GA be the Lie algebra generated by the vector space H together with elements E1 through EL and F1 through FL subject to the following relations. So the commutator of H with H is 0, so they commute among themselves. So that's first relation. Second relation is EI FJ, the bracket of this is delta IJ and alpha J check. Third relation is H EI, this bracket equals alpha IH EI. And let me also write H of FI is minus of alpha IH FI. This is for all I between 1 and L and H in German H. Okay. And finally, so-called Sayre relation, or Sayre relations, and this is add EI 1 minus AIJ EJ equals 0, and this also is add FI 1 minus AIJ FJ for all I different from J. So this is the set of relations. So Kaas-Moody and this algebra GA is called the Lie algebra GA. Is called the Kaas-Moody algebra. Associated to the GCM. So let's see if I have defined everything precisely. So this Lie algebra GA is generated by H together with certain symbols EI and FI, and the relations are exactly what is put here on the board. Now this Lie algebra, so one proves a small lemma which says that this H embeds inside G. I mean, a priori it's not completely clear that, I mean, even though G was generated by H and these symbols, but then you have to quotient out by these relations. And it's not very clear that H will embed in G, but actually one proves that it does. So H is called the standard Cartan subalgebra and EI FIs are called positive and negative. Well, maybe I will just say respectively are called positive, respectively negative simple root vectors. Okay, so that actually brings me to the root space decomposition, right? So we want to decompose this Lie algebra G as a representation for its subalgebra H under the adjoint action, of course. So then the result is that G decomposes as H plus G alpha, where alpha is certain elements, I mean runs over certain elements in H star. So what is G alpha? So G alpha by definition is the alpha root space. So this is set of those X in G such that HX equals alpha HX for all H in German. So what I'm saying here is that G decomposes in terms of the weight space H for the action of H. And so those alpha for which, so those alphas such that G alpha is non-zero are called weights, no, roots of G. Actually, I should take out 0 from here, because you will notice that H itself really corresponds to, or at least part of G0. So under this notation, H is part of G0, H being commutative. So H is certainly part of G0, and actually what one proves that H is exactly equal to G0. Okay, so these are called roots. Which sum?
Root space decomposition.
Of course.
But that means what, your alpha is linearly independent, isn't it? Is that true that alpha is linearly independent?
They are, because see, I took them to be this one. So for me, those are. Okay, I see what you are. So I should have said that. Thanks, you are right. So this is a linearly independent alpha and alpha n in H star are linearly independent, and this also is. Yes, you are absolutely right. Thanks. Okay, so now let me define delta plus, and this consists of let delta be the set of roots of G. So this is exactly those alphas which are themselves non-zero, and G alpha is non-zero. So now, actually, maybe I should do it here. So then what one proves, lemma, that delta H, delta plus disjoint union, delta minus, where delta plus is exactly equal to delta intersected with Z plus alpha I from 1 to L, and delta minus is nothing but minus of delta plus. So everything is happening inside H star. So delta is a certain subset of H star, so everything is happening inside H star. Okay, so now I have defined the cosmoid algebra, and we have this root space decomposition. Now let me define certain subalgebras which I will be needing, and those are called parabolic subalgebras or standard parabolic subalgebras. So standard parabolic subalgebras. So to define this, we need to take, let Y be any subset of this indexing set 1 through L. So I take any subset here, and first I am going to define GY. So GY is nothing but you take direct sum G alpha and cot on, but alpha you don't take in all delta, but you take delta and Z plus alpha I, where you take I in Y. I hope you can read this. So this I am taking. So GY by definition, so this is the definition of GY. So GY, you take the Cartan together with all those G alphas, where alpha is a root, so it's in delta. And secondly, alpha can be written as Z plus alpha I only in Y. I mean, here it was, I was running from 1 through L, but now Y is a certain subset of this, so I am only allowed to take I in Y. And I am not excluding the possibility of Y being empty or Y being the whole thing. So Y is any subset. It could be empty and it could be whole thing. So this is GY. And now I define PY. Okay, actually, let me also define UI. So UI by definition is, so it's direct sum of those G alphas such that alpha lies in delta plus, but then you remove in delta plus Y. And I guess I need to define delta plus Y is nothing but delta plus intersected with Z plus alpha I in Y. So that's delta plus Y. So we take only those, so elements in delta plus are called, okay, so elements of delta plus are called positive roots. And similarly, delta minus are called negative roots. Okay, so I'm taking those positive roots, which can be written as linear combination of alpha I's coming only from Y. So UI by definition is set of those root spaces where alpha runs over positive roots, but it should not lie in delta Y plus. So that's UI. And now finally, the parabolic subalgebra PY, so is nothing but by definition GY direct sum UY. Well, actually, my Lie algebras, I would prefer them to be German. So No. For GY, I want all of them. Oops. Sorry. Thanks. 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 Sorry. Thanks. So PY is called, this is standard parabolic subalgebra. So PY is called the standard parabolic subalgebra corresponding to the subset Y. And UI is called its nil radical, and GY is called its Levy subalgebra. Levy subalgebra. Now, of course, we need to prove that PY indeed is a Lie algebra. I mean, I'm calling it, so by algebra, I mean Lie algebra here. Now, it's pretty clear, actually, what is pretty easy to see, that if we take the commutator of G alpha with G beta, any alpha and beta, then it will go inside alpha plus beta. That's nothing but the Jacobi identity. So it's a trivial consequence of Jacobi. So from that, you more or less immediately see that GY is a Lie subalgebra. You take the bracket of 2, and so if alpha and beta both have this constraint, then alpha plus beta will have the same constraint. So it's pretty clear that GY will be a subalgebra. And right. And then what one proves, and also UI is a subalgebra, that also is pretty clear. Because that means that if I write alpha in terms of simple root, there is at least one alpha I which does not lie in Y, whose coefficient is non-zero here. That's what this means, really. I mean, positive coefficient. So if I take any two such things, it will continue to have that property. So it's pretty clear that UI is a Lie subalgebra. But also it's equally easy to see that GY normalizes UI. So GY normalizes UI. So this immediately will imply that PY is a subalgebra of G. So indeed, PY is a subalgebra, and this is what is called the standard parabolic subalgebra of G corresponding to the subset Y. Now, and this UI is an ideal. So this gives that UI is an ideal in PY. And of course, GY is a subalgebra in PY. It was a subalgebra in G, which is sitting inside PY, so it's a subalgebra of PY. Okay, so those are the objects I will make to use subsequently. Now let's see, what do I need? So now I have not given you a single example so far of such algebras. So let me give you a couple of examples. So example one, or maybe even I could say example zero, is that any finite dimensional semi-simple Lie algebra. So any finite dimensional semi-simple Lie algebra G is an example of a Kac-Moody algebra. So that is, there exists a GCM A such that G is isomorphic as a Lie algebra with GA. And this A is nothing but the Cartan matrix associated to that semi-simple algebra. And in fact, this isomorphism is a consequence of a theorem due to Sayre. Okay. Now, another next example is the genuine example of a Kaas-Murray algebra, in the sense that this was, in any case, studied for quite a long time. So this example is that let's start with a simple, so finite dimensional simple Lie algebra, let's say G naught. So let's start with a finite dimensional simple Lie algebra G naught, and then I'm going to construct a infinite dimensional Lie algebra out of this, and this is nothing but its G naught tensor over complex number with the Laurent polynomial ring C T T inverse. So this is the Laurent polynomial ring, and then I have to add a central piece and a derivation piece. So far I'm just giving you a vector space. So to define a Lie algebra, I have to give you a vector space and I have to give you the Lie bracket. So the vector space is G naught tensor this plus CC plus CD. CD being just one's favorite symbols. Okay, C for center and D for derivation. So there is some logic behind choosing those letters. Okay. And now G naught comes equipped with a Killing form. So G naught has the Killing form normalized. So I need to normalize it so that if I take the dual form, so theta is 2 for the longest root theta, for the highest root. So if I take the highest root theta of G, then see, whenever you have a form on G naught, you can take the dual form on G naught dual, and H naught dual is part of that, and theta is an element there, so theta should be 2. So that's how I'm going to normalize. So there is an ambiguity of normalization, but otherwise it's unique. So once I normalize it this way, then I can define you the bracket. So let's see. So I have to tell you X tensor Tm plus lambda C plus mu D, and then X prime tensor Tm prime plus lambda prime C plus mu prime D, and I have to tell you what this bracket is. Now, okay, so first of all, X, so this is first of all X prime tensor Tm plus M prime. So this, and now C is supposed to be central element, so that commutes with everything, it commutes with everything, so bracket is 0, and then plus mu prime, and then X tensor Tm D, so this will be minus M of X tensor Tm, and then let's see, so this C is going to give you 0. I mean, C in any case gives you 0 plus mu D. So this will be M prime, X prime, Tm prime. And there is one contribution from the central piece. So this is, let's take the Killing form XX prime and delta M minus M prime C together. And this is the Kronecker delta. So this is the definition of Lie bracket. One checks that it satisfies all the all the required properties for this to be Lie algebra, and this is what is called the affine Kasmary Lie algebra. So this Lie algebra G, so G is called the affine Kasmary Lie algebra associated to G naught. Now actually I have to justify, sorry, yes, that's right, that's exactly right, absolutely, absolutely. Now I have to justify that it is Kasmary. So one proof, so there is a theorem which says that there exists a GCM A such that GA is indeed isomorphic with G as Lie algebra. And in fact, this A is very easy to construct from the Cartan matrix of G naught. So you just take the Cartan matrix of G naught, let's call it A naught, and here you put 2, and then you put something here, and the thing you put here is minus alpha I theta check, and here what you put is minus theta alpha I check. So that's what goes here, and that's what comes here. So right. So then one proves that this becomes isomorphic, and in fact this isomorphism also is rather explicitly given. So there is a very explicit isomorphism between these two Lie algebras. But in any case, that does not really interest me as much. So this class, affine Lie algebras, this class of Kasmary algebras, this affine Kasmary Lie algebras, is by far the most important class of Kasmary algebras, which has found, tremendous amount of applications in various branches of mathematics and physics. Okay, so I think I am pretty much done with introduction to Kasmary algebras. Now I need couple of other basic items to define, and so let me first start with Weyl group associated to the Lie algebra G. So Weyl group is a certain subgroup of the automorphism group of H star. So H is a vector space, a finite dimensional vector space. I take its full dual H star and then take the automorphism of that. So Weyl group is going to be a certain subgroup of this. So this Weyl group is generated by certain simple reflections, so-called simple reflections, where I'm going to define this SI explicitly. So SI, so this should be an automorphism of H star. So that means that if you give me an element in H star, I should give you some other element of H star. That's what I should do. So if I take lambda, so then I have to tell you what this is. So this is nothing but lambda minus lambda alpha I check alpha I. And let's see that we are in the right space H. So lambda was in H star. So this is in H star. Alpha I was in H star. Alpha I was, check was in H, in the Cartan itself. Lambda was in H star, so I can evaluate that. So this just means that evaluation, the standard pairing between H and H star. So I can evaluate. So that's a number. So lambda minus this number times alpha I, so that's another element in H star. And one proves rather easily that, actually, there is really not much even to prove, that it is a reflection. So it's a reflection by the hyperplane, which is, so the hyperplane HI is those lambdas such that lambda alpha I check is 0. So take this hyperplane, and it's a reflection by this hyperplane. So that's what. So in particular, it's an automorphism. So now I take the subgroup inside this, generated by BJ-Sage. So I have given you a bunch of L elements in OutH star, and let's just take the subgroup generated by that. And that subgroup, so this notation just means subgroup generated by that, and this is what is called the wild group associated to GA. So W is called the wild group. Associated to GA. Okay, so now I need to move to the representation theory. So first of all, let me define what is an integrable module. So before I define integrable module, let me start with let T from V to V be a linear transformation. Linear map of a vector space V. And I'm not assuming V to be finite dimensional. So then T is called locally finite. If for all V in V, there exists a finite dimensional subspace, let's say LV contained in V and this contains V, such that T of LV goes inside LV. So LV is kept intact by T. So if for every V in V we can find a finite dimensional subspace contained in V such that T of LV is in LV, then we call such a linear transformation to be locally finite. Now moreover, such a locally finite T is called locally nilpotent if T restricted to LV is a nilpotent transformation for all V in V and some choice of finite dimensional LV. So a locally finite transformation is called locally nilpotent if for every V in V I can find a finite dimensional space such that T keeps that subspace intact and T restricted to that subspace is nilpotent. That means some power of that is zero. So the point is that this means that T restricted to some finite dimensional subspace, some power of that is zero. But this power can increase as we move to different subspaces in that vector space. Okay, so now I can define, so finally I need one more definition. So let V be a representation of a Kac-Moody algebra G equals GA. In fact, I will reserve the symbol G, German G, for Kac-Moody algebra. So when I don't say anything and write G, I would mean that it's a Kac-Moody algebra. So let V be a representation of a Kac-Moody. So it's a Lie algebra, and we can talk about representation of a Lie algebra. And I'm not demanding that V is finite. So it's just some vector space on which this Lie algebra acts. So then V is called a weight module. If V is direct sum of V lambda, lambda in H star, where V lambda is the lambdath weight space. So this consists of those vectors in V such that H acting on V is lambda H acting on times V for all H in H. So that's the lambdath weight space. So if V is direct sum of its weight space H, so such a module is called a weight module. Now, so a weight module of G is called integrable if all the EIs and FIs, so those were the positive and negative simple root vectors, act on V locally nilpotently. So see, V is a representation of G, so in particular any element of G acts on V as a endomorphism. So if I take any EI, so then it's going to give me a map from V to V. So this map should be a locally nilpotent endomorphism of V for all EIs and FIs. So if that's the case, then we call such a representation an integrable module. Now I am going to really classify all those integrable highest weight modules. So I need to define, let's see, so maybe I should define the highest weight module. Okay, so to do that, I need to define Verma modules. Okay, so actually that's good that that board is still not erased. So there is one particular case of Y which is of special interest, and that is Y equals MT. So let me write it here. So let's take Y equals the empty set. I told you that Y is allowed to be any subset, including empty set. So not including empty set, especially empty set, I would use the word, because that's especially interesting. So let's take Y equals empty set. And if I take Y equals empty set, then let's see what is this py. So let's write down specifically what this py is. So py was supposed to be gy, okay, and gy was supposed to be this one, but I'm taking y to be empty set. So if I take empty set, then this summation has to be 0. I mean, this is an empty summation, so that's supposed to be empty. So there is nothing here, so this part goes away. So gy, if y is empty, is nothing but the Cartan H. So then gy is H, so let me write that. And then we have to add onto it ui, that means I have to add g alphas, where alpha should be in delta plus, but it should not be in delta y plus. But delta y plus is really a subset here, that's already empty, so there is nothing. So there is nothing that we need to exclude. So that means that py in this case is H direct sum g alpha, alpha is in delta plus. And since one uses this subalgebra very often, so let's fix a symbol for this, B, and B is Borel, so B is called the standard Borel subalgebra. G. Okay. So now I can define Verma module. So Verma module is going to be a module of G. So actually it's simply defined. So first of all, let me just remind you that G modules are same as UG modules for any Lie algebra, actually, UG being the enveloping algebra. So a G module is nothing but a UG module. I mean, it's not nothing but from a G module, you easily get a UG module, and conversely. So these two categories are exactly the same. So Verma, so that means that I have to give you a UG module. So Verma module is nothing but UG tensored UB, and then I am going to write C lambda. So this is going to be M lambda for lambda in H star. So let's fix one lambda in H star, any lambda in H star, and then I'm defining Verma module corresponding to this lambda, which I'm going to denote by M lambda. So M lambda is UG tensored with C lambda. I'm going to explain what do I mean by C lambda over UB. Now UB is acting on UG via right multiplication. B is a Lie subalgebra of G, so UB is a subalgebra of UG. So in particular, I am allowed to multiply UB on the right side on UG. So that's the UB module. And now C lambda is going to be a UB module, which is same as a B module. Okay. So now I have to tell you, how does B act on C lambda? So before I tell you how does B act on C lambda, I have to tell you what is C lambda as a vector space. So C lambda as a vector space is nothing but C. So this is a one-dimensional space. Okay, so only thing now it remains to tell you that if I take x and if I take some vector here, let's say 1, I mean for that matter any vector z in C, so I have to tell you what is this number now. So this is 0 if x belongs to any of the root spaces alpha different from 0. And I mean alpha and delta plus, actually. See, that this Lie algebra B was direct sum of two things. One was this, and another was this. So I have to tell you how does a root vector act, and then how does an element in the Cartan act. So now if I take an element in the Cartan, then it acts by lambda H times V for H in Cartan H. Okay. So that's how this action is given. And one checks fairly easily that this is indeed a Lie algebra representation. Now, okay, so I have given you a vector space here. So this is the vector space UG tensor C lambda over this ring. Now I have to tell you how does the Lie algebra G or UG act on this. So UG simply acts by left multiplication on this factor, doesn't care about this factor at all. So UG just acts on via left multiplication. So UG acts via left multiplication on M lambda. Okay. So this is what is called Verma module. Now I define the highest weight module and category O. So let's see. So highest weight module, so a G module, V, is called a highest weight module. If of highest weight lambda, if V age quotient of M lambda. For some phi, for some G module map phi. So it should be surjective quotient of M lambda. Such a thing is called highest weight module. So finally, I need to define category O. So category O. So category O is so called the BGG, Bunsen-Gelfand-Gelfand category. So this consists of so it's a category of certain G modules. So a G module M is said to be in category O. If two things happen, one, if M is a weight module, which I have already defined somewhere, if M is a weight module with finite dimensional weight space H, that is each M lambda is finite dimensional. And two, so let PM be the set of weights, of M, that is PM consists of those lambdas in H star such that M lambda is non-zero. Let's take that. Then PM is sitting inside, actually I need to define one more thing. So PM is just sitting inside, so I have to define that. So let me first write this, lambda I union I from 1 to some finite set M, for some finite set lambda 1 lambda m of H star. Okay, so what is this notation now? Where? So I guess I can just continue. So where H star less than lambda is by definition those mu in H star which can be written such that mu can be written as mu equals lambda minus ni alpha I ni in Z plus. So this notation means that I'm taking those elements in H star which are less than or equal to lambda in the usual Bruha partial order, if you know what it is. And if you don't, then this is exactly what it is. That you take those elements in H star such that mu can be written as mu equals lambda minus summation ni alpha I, where ni are allowed to be arbitrary non-negative integers. Now Z plus for me is set of 0, 1, 2, 3, so on. And actually at some point I may or may not need the natural numbers for me is 1, 2, 3, 4, so on. Okay, so that's the category O. So that means that the set of weights, so if I have to describe it in a slightly pictorial manner, so a module is supposed to be in category O if its weights are finite union of cones. So there are some, I mean, they may have, so lambda 1, lambda 2, say lambda 3, lambda 4, say lambda 5, and then I am going to take the cone of things, and then I only take the integral points here. So I take the integral points here, and similarly here, and here, and here. So the weights should only lie in this region, and actually not only that they should lie in this region, but they should be, I mean, integral. It should be only in the integral points of these cones, so to say. So that's what a module in category O means. So we are not allowed too broad set of weights, let me put this way. Okay, so let me give you some examples of, so to define a category, I need to tell you what the objects in the category are and what the morphisms are. So I told you what the objects are. So objects are precisely those G modules which satisfy those two properties, 1 and 2. And now the morphisms in O are, so morphisms in O are precisely G module maps, are precisely any G module maps. Okay, so I will give you one, two examples, and then I will stop for today. So before I give you example, let me just make some remarks that, so if M is in category O, then any N which is contained in M, then for any N contained in M, N belongs to category O. Two, any quotient of M in category O is again in O. Three, finite sum, direct sum of modules Mi in category O implies direct sum Mii from 1 to m is again in category O. It's not true for infinite direct sums. And 4, for m n in category O, their tensor product is again in category O. So these are all pretty trivial things. And let's see, M lambda, any Verma module, M lambda is in category. So actually, my time, I think, is up. So why not, yes, let me quickly, I will take 2 more minutes. So can I take 2 more minutes? Okay, so let me define this L max lambda. So now I need one other basic object which I will be needing subsequently, and that is called the dominant integral weight, so D. So let D be the set of dominant integral weights. Defined by, so D is a certain subset of H star, lambda in H star, such that lambda of alpha I check should belong to Z plus for all coroot, simple coroot. So you remember alpha 1 check through alpha L check where the simple coroots right on the first blackboard. So lambda is an element in H star, alpha I check is an element in the Cartan. So I can evaluate it, and that should be in Z plus for all I between 1 and L. So those are called dominant integral weights. Now for any such dominant integral weight, I am going to give you a representation. And this representation is going to be quotient of Verma module. What is the dual statement? Yes. No. No, it is not. But you see, okay. So maybe not today. And if I need it, I will tell you what it is. So the stupid dual doesn't work, obviously. Because the cones are only going down, they are not going up. And when you take dual, you start to go up, and you are not allowed to go up for too long a time. So, but there is a dual, a slightly more refined dual, which works. And I'm not sure if I really need that, but in any case, I will do that in subsequent lectures if I really need that. Okay, so let me define that. So I need to define one integrable module. Now, actually, right. So I have not given a single exercise so far. And I'm not giving a research conference lecture where I'm not supposed to really give exercise yet. This is supposed to be an instructional lecture. So exercise, no M lambda is integrable. Okay. So now I want to define L max lambda, and this is supposed to be a quotient of M lambda. So now definition. So take lambda in D now. I'm not taking an arbitrary lambda. I'm taking lambda in D, and I want to define a quotient of M lambda, which I'm going to just denote L max lambda. And this max will become clear in a little bit time. Maybe not today, maybe. So this is defined to be quotient of M lambda divided by the ideal, submodule generated by Fi to the power lambda alpha I check plus 1. And then you just apply it to vector 1. So M lambda, the definition is still somewhere. Yes. So the element 1, so C lambda has the vector 1, and I take 1. And I'm just going to call the vector 1. Sometimes to be precise, I should call it 1 lambda. It depends upon lambda. So it's the identity element of the algebra and 1 in the complex numbers, so 1 tensor 1. So that's 1. Let me take 1 lambda. So I have this vector 1 lambda here. And I take Fi to the power lambda alpha I check. Now, that's where I'm using that I am in D. So lambda alpha I check is supposed to be in a non-negative, is supposed to be non-negative integer, plus 1, so it becomes a strictly positive integer. That makes very good sense now to apply it to 1 lambda. So I'll produce a vector here, and this notation means that the G submodule generated by that, and I is supposed to run between 1 and L. So take the G submodule generated by that, take the quotient, now actually, and this is a more non-trivial exercise. So L max lambda is an integrable module for any lambda in D. That's the only case where it is defined. It's not defined otherwise, because if lambda is not in D, that means there is some I for which this is not a non-negative integer, and then this starts not to be defined. So next time I will show that, or at least I will say that any integrable module which is highest weight is quotient of L max lambda. And that's why this L max lambda. So So in any case, I will continue that next time. So sorry to take some extra minutes. So.